This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I am Meera Sivasothi. It's our Health and Living segment and we are discussing a condition called spina bifida. It is a condition that affects the spine, your spinal cord of an unborn child, leaving them with varying degrees of paralysis that can lead to other physical and emotional challenges later on in life. Now, the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia shares how they're going to be improving the quality of life of those afflicted with this condition. And in the studio with me are Yang Mi Eng. She's the president of the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia. And I also have Associate Professor Dr. Rashida Ismail, who's a consultant rehab physician. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are you today?
Hello.
Fine, thanks.
We are fine.
Okay. Professor Rashida, how would you explain what spina bifida really is?
Okay. So the word spina bifida comes from Latin words. It's meaning split or open spine. So it is a birth defect. We also call it a neurotube defect. Mm-hmm. And it occurs at the end of first month of pregnancy when the two sides of the fetus spine fail to fused together and leaving an opening or defect.
Okay, and that can range to disabilities. That can result in disabilities.
Exactly. And there are different types of spina bifida. In some of the cases, there is a small defect which is covered by a thin layer of intact skin, and we call it a spina bifida occulta. Mm-hmm. This is a mild conditions, and most of them are quite okay. And in some of the cases, the spinal cord and or covering layer, meninges, may push through the opening. And in this condition, we'll call it myelocele or meningocele. And the patients may present with some form of neurological problems, bladder bowel issues. And if both spinal cord and meninges come off from the defect at the back, from the back of the spine, we call it the myelomeningocele. That is the most severe and common form of spina bifida. So in this type of case, the child will present with paralysis, which are the weakness of the lower limb, and they present to you with the foot deformities. Because of intersensitive skin, they present to you with the pressure ulcer, and they have lost control over bladder and bowel, so they present to you with incontinence. And this sort of severe conditions, is commonly associated with the hydrocephalus. Hydrocephalus is a condition where the excessive cerebrospinal fluid accumulate in the brain. And so this type of children, they present with the learning deficits, cognitive impairments and attention deficit disorders.
Okay. So do we know what causes this to happen in the brain? And you were saying it happens by the end of the first month, am I correct?
Yes, okay.
Pregnancy.
Okay, the causes of spina bifida, it is a multifactorial and it has a polygenic inheritance, so it's a common causes, as we all know, mother with a folic deficiency and during the pregnancy, and the other causes are diabetes, hyperthermia means, body temperature is high. And then if they are taking medications like anti-seizure medications, example, valproic acid, so this all can lead to spina bifida.
Okay, and hence the reason why they say folic acid is extremely important.
Exactly.
Even if you are thinking about or planning to have a baby. But is that a guarantee that, your child will be free of spina bifida?
We can't guarantee. It's maybe about 70% or less can be preventable. And the remaining percentage, we call it a non-metabolizer. It means that, in spite of folic acid supplementation, this woman of childbearing group, they still have a risk of having a baby with spina bifida.
What would cause a woman to have low folic acid levels or folate levels in the first place?
Okay, so maybe it's like a deficiency. The intake is not enough. So means they have especially from low socioeconomic country, because of the poor nutrition, they may develop a folic acid deficiency. Some people, they have folic acid level normal in the blood, but they can't metabolize to produce a special substance which is required for your neurotube development.
I see. So it comes in various forms. You're talking about food, where can you find folic acid in food?
Yes, the best food source of folic acid is fortified cereals. And we have and other citrus fruits. So means, you know, example, the orange has the highest source of folic acid content. And in an orange, one orange can hold about 50 microgram of folic acid. And a large glass of, you know, fresh fruit juice can be even more than that.
Okay, yeah. So oranges.
Yes. Really, and then other folic-containing fruits are like bananas, grapefruits, grapes, papayas, strawberries. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Mi Eng, you have spina bifida. Could you share your story with us? What's it like living with spina bifida? And I mean, I've met other people with spina bifida, and you're beautiful. Yeah. And you know, they have more disabilities in terms of physical disabilities. Mm. But you walked into the studio. I mean, yeah. I was prepared for somebody in a wheelchair, actually. But you just have a slight limp. Okay. What's it been like growing up with spina bifida?
Actually, it is tough. I would just say tough, because you have to really be strong to curb all social impact and social treatment from mm-hmm. people. Because for people, most people, they are not used to handicap. I mean, people thought that handicap is people with the wheelchair. So this is actually quite tough for people like me, mm-hmm. Because I do have a very weak limb, but because I constantly do exercise to keep it up and then to make sure that I'm actually quite fit, you know, to handle day-to-day task. Mm-hmm. So I built some sort of like a power and energy on my limb so I can move around.
Okay.
So most of the time, visiting hospitals is actually my very routine things since young. So I think I have more than over 40 operations, big and small. So going to school and having MC and skipping school, all that is part and parcel of life. And having high fever of infections of ulcers. So these are the things that spinal bifida people have to bear with. And also, of course, incontinence and all. So of getting friends to be like, you know, wondering what's wrong with you, even with the age, you know, this age, you're still having this kind of incontinence problem. Mm-hmm. So, but again, for me, it's I came from a very strong support, family support background. So I grew up with my other siblings, you know, just like other child. Mm-hmm. There's no special treatment from my mom and dad. So they still punish me like normal child. So that makes me really very hardcore. You know, a lot of people come forward and ask me, why are you so hardcore? I say, oh, I think maybe because my family don't give me special treatment. I always tell them, hey, I'm handicapped. Can't you give me a little bit of discount?
Nice try.
Nice try.
To come back to Professor Rashida. Mi Eng actually has which type of spina bifida?
She's like a myelomeningocele.
Okay, yeah. So the most severe form.
Yes, but fortunately she can still walk because her level is a bit lower down. Because we it can occur at different levels, you know, from the, let's say, we call it lumbosacral, is at the back of your, lower back of your, you know, spine. Mm-hmm. That level, they usually present it with the, you know, neurology is not that bad. Yeah, and the higher, as usual, the higher the lesions, the greater the problem. So I think her is a lower level. That's why she is still able to walk, but she has some, you know, alignment issues in both lower limbs.
So what are these operations for? What is surgery for? What are you actually doing?
Okay, so if the baby is, you know, pick up at the neonatal age, we can refer to our neurosurgeons for the, you know, is to offer some operations. You know, we can do a defect closure and VB shunt insertions if they have associated the hydrocephalus, just I have mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. so they can offer that sort of operation.
When was your first operation, Mi Eng?
9 months old, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, because when I was born in Lumut, Perak, doctor didn't know that it was actually a handicap or something wrong with the baby. They actually just said that it's a normal baby. So I went back with a lump at the back. And my mom thought that it is actually a birthmark. Mm-hmm. And I keep putting ointment and all that, you know. So one day when I had a fall down from the bed, so I hit the spine. And then, of course, non-stop crying and all that. So they sent me back to the hospital and just found out that, oh, actually I'm on spina bifida. So that was my first operation at 9 months old. After that, everything just come one by one, you know, with the first ulcer on my left foot. And actually, I lost one toe because the severity of the ulcer infection has actually eaten all the bones. So I can't actually save my toe that time. So it was really quite bad. When I have infection, I will be on a very high dose of antibiotics for months. Yeah, so that time when I was young, I didn't know. I was thinking that, hey, you know, and my father always say, let's have a massage for your leg. But that actually helped to massage and to have some blood circulation. Yeah, because I have a very weak muscles on my thighs and all that. And if not for the for the massage, I think I might not be able to walk properly.
Okay, so it's very important then, the early intervention, Professor Rashida?
Yes, sure.
Okay, so what are the symptoms that a child, a baby actually is born with spina bifida? What do you look out for?
Okay, the first thing is, you know, you will see the defect at the back of the spine.
Does everybody have it?
Yeah, it's those with it. Just I have mentioned, it's like a, you know, spina bifida occulta. You can see just a dimpling with the head tuft. So that's a mild form of case. If, let's say, meningomyelosis, you will see the swelling, you know. It depends on the severity.
More prominent
swelling,
okay.
Yes.
So that's the first sign.
That's the first sign, yeah.
Okay. What are the ulcers that Miang is actually talking about? Why are they prone to ulcers?
Okay. So, you know, when does your spinal cord control your muscle functions and sensation, right? So, you know, if it's your spinal cord is affected, so they present to you with the insensate skin. So in that case, you know, for us, we know when we have a pressure on the skin, when we have pain, we know, you know, when to change the position. For her, she doesn't have that sort of protective sensation. So, you know, while sitting on the wheelchair also, she doesn't know how to, she didn't remember, you know, to change the position, you know. So that's how she developed, you know, sacral ischia ulcers and foot ulcers because of the foot alignment issues.
So you don't feel the friction.
Yes.
And
totally numb, actually.
Hence the discomfort. Yeah. So it's numb, even till today.
Yes. And I had one experience when I was on a beach. I was walking around the sandy beach, you know, white sandy beach. And suddenly everybody was shouting. Because I was have a big deep cut, and I was walking like nobody else's business. So it is in that level, you know. So until you see it, then you say, "Oh," you know. Then your brain kicks in pain, you know.
Okay.
But if I don't see it, normally I won't feel pain.
Okay.
So even driving sometimes, doctor was a bit shocked to see me driving without any modification to my car.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm quite used to it because the sensors are automatic. You know, adjustment.
You know already.
Yeah, I know already. Even without the sensation on my foot. Yeah. So I'm walking around without any sensation.
That's because you know your car very well.
I did a lot of modifications for my shoes because I can't really get a good podiatry in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
So all the shoes padding and all that is by try and error.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We're discussing spina bifida with Yang Mi-Eng. She's the president of the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia and Associate Professor Dr. Rashida Ismail. She's a consultant rehab physician. If you have a question on spina bifida, give us a call. The number is 03-7710-9000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. Good afternoon. It's Health and Living. I'm Mira Sivasurthy. We are discussing spina bifida today. Yang Mi-Eng, the president of Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia, together with Associate Professor Dr. Rashida Ismail, a consultant rehab physician with us. If you have a question on spina bifida, the number to call us is 03-7710-9000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. Earlier on, Mi-Eng actually spoke about how when she was born, you know, it wasn't really identified. So, Professor Rashida, you've told us that usually there is a bump on the back, some more severe than the others, and that could possibly be a sign. But what would doctors do the minute you're born and you see this? What is the immediate intervention that is required to sort of minimize the sort of challenges later on in life?
Okay.
And I'm sure we've come a long way since, Mi-Eng was actually born. I'm sure in terms of development and research, we've come a long way.
Okay, if we see the patients, you know, the newborn infants with all the swelling, abnormal swelling at the back, we immediately refer to our neurosurgeons and get the opinion. So from there, we plan for the multidisciplinary team management because, you know, as I have said, you know, the myelomeningocele is, you know, the most severe form and they give you a lot of problems like paralysis, you know, and insensate skins and they present you with, and later on they will develop the foot deformity and then they have passing motion, passing urine problems and those associated with the VP shunts, that is, I think, about 90% associated with hydrocephalus, and you know they can present with the you know cognitive impairment, learning disability. So to prevent all these things, we do manage the patients with a multidisciplinary team approach. So which include various professionals treating the patient separately with discipline specific goal. So fortunately, you know, we have a multidisciplinary team care in PPUKM. We call it Joint Spinal Bifida Clinic, and we run once a month. And, you know, we include all the various disciplines. So our team include rehab physicians. So we deal with the physical disability of the patients and overall well-being of the patients, children with spinal bifida. And our pediatric neurologists monitor the neurology and complications, neurology-associated complications, and then our pediatric nephrologist, which is dealing with all the kidney function. So you know, pediatric nephrologists will aim to reduce urinary tract infections because this sort of children, you know, they tend to have a repeated urinary tract infections because they are not able to pass urine spontaneously, and they also have an incontinence. So, and then the nephrologist will, you know, preserve the kidney functions and also help, you know, aim to enable the children to be dry by nursery school. So means to achieve incontinence, which is also very important for school going age. So, and then a psychologist is also essential to a greater or lesser extent, help with in managing the psychological problems of, you know, children with spinal bifida as well as parents.
Okay. Yeah. How common is spinal bifida in Malaysia?
It's how common, I think I will talk about the worldwide, you know, incidence because we don't have a comprehensive data yet. So, you know, in the average worldwide incidence is one case per 1,000 live births. But the incidence varies from region to region and continent to continent. And in USA, it's about, you know, 1,500 infants with spinal bifida are born every year. So here, we don't have a comprehensive data yet, but according to the study done in 2009 in 32 Malaysian hospitals, Malaysian National Neonatal Registry, so they said 0.11 per 1,000, but still it's not representative of the whole society.
0.11
Yeah,
we are looking 1,000. About 45,000.
Yeah,
right
so
now.
It's like 45,000. So those yeah. with the spinal bifida
exactly.
In Malaysia is about 45,000.
Yeah,
yes,
it's around that.
Estimated okay. numbers.
Every
yes.
year, do we know how many children are born?
You're looking about because our birth rate is going down also. So we receive a lot of cases right now. It's not really in the village or what, you know, it is actually in the city. There's a lot. And we don't have a specific data.
We need a yeah. proper national registry to get yeah. all these data.
Because
details,
the problem
details,
is our
yeah.
national registry is still using generic categorizations
yes.
right. for all the handicapped.
Okay. Like a neurotube defect. Yes. So you know, it covers other types of neurotube defect as well.
So Mieng, did you decide to set up the Spinal Bifida Association of Malaysia? Was it your idea?
Me and Dr. Professor Amara mm-hmm. from HUKM, because I was saw a newspaper advertisement 10 years ago, and it called for all the spinal bifida to come and have a conference discussion. So I was like, wow, you know, I thought I was alone, you know, having this kind of problem, because this is actually not something you want to talk about sometimes with incontinence problem. So I was quite happy that there is something like that. And then I went, and the rest are history. Because when I saw that so many of the parents was holding their kids, and they are all like, need people to really, really understand them. Because we have a multidisciplinary problem, like so many things have to be robbed in to help one child. So most of us actually do not have capacity in terms of financial and the support of time and all that. Because funnily, you know, from the world statistic, they look at most of the cases are from a very low income family for spinal bifida. So the higher incomes is less frequency. So when I saw that this is happening, like people come forward are all like generally people who need help.
Yep.
So Dr. Amara said, "Young, can you do something?" So I say, "Okay." And I was nominated as a president that time, you know. So because everybody was looking at me able to walk around, you know. So I say, "Okay, fine, let's do something." So that is where we started to set up the association in 2007. So until today, I think we have close to about 200 members. But we are not too happy about our achievement yet, because we wanted to reach more people. There's a reason why we have the concert later we can talk about, to create awareness. Because we know that out there, you know, people out there, there are many spinal bifida people who has nowhere to go, no platform to share their experience, and sometimes they are psychologically, we are quite, mm-hmm. you know, need some support.
So coming back to you as somebody who has spinal bifida, how did you, psychologically, how did you cope? And when did it hit you? Because sometimes as children, you know, it doesn't bother you. You just run with, you know, you're a child. And then at some stage, I suppose when you start school and all of that, when you start to interact with peers and, you know, as you grow older, how did you manage on a psychological level?
I started to realize I'm different from others when I was 13. You are very right.
Puberty.
You know? Yeah, puberty. Because I wanted to wear some skirts and all that. I suddenly found I have very skinny legs. You know, so I also found that, oh, how come I always go to toilet? I always had to rush, you know. So that moment of self-realization was really tough. And I think also because family of six, we are actually been really, really disciplined by our sisters and brothers. So there's no really like, you know, having any special pampered, unlike now. Now we have so many family of spinal bifida have one child policy. You know, most of them have one child. So they actually...
Because they're afraid of
having
more
them.
Children.
Yes, we have some members of...
We'll come back to that, but very quickly, is it hereditary?
There is a polygenic inheritance, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Continue.
So some of them actually didn't want to have second baby, mm-hmm. might have another chance. So and also, they become very protective of the child. Actually, some of my members have that kind of treatment from their parents, you know. Everything are prepared for them. So,
which is not the best thing.
Not the best. Actually, I have always said that don't pamper too much. I'm not saying they have to beat your child or what. No, not really. But you just have to let them grow and have certain level of independency that they can actually make their own decision. Because after all...
Sounds like every child today. you know, they're all...
I just don't want to get blamed. You stop from me.
They're all pampered, you know. But sorry, yeah.
Because so, you have not enough. Maybe you have only one child, and mm-hmm. I can't blame the parents. But with the six siblings, you know, we have to share everything. You know? Everything passed to me is like a fourth generation already. My uniforms, shoes, you know. So for me, it's coping with this spinal bifida needs a lot of guts and a lot of training from your family. It's not only school. Of course, school, I'm lucky enough that I study fully, all graduated from local universities, all until, you know, I get my current doctorate. So for me, is I have the opportunity. But many of us doesn't have the opportunity, because with the Spinal Bifida Association, we realize some of our kids actually went to school crawling every day. Two staircases, two sets of staircases.
Mm-hmm.
Two flights. And now... Actually, looking at that, I really felt so sad for them, because these are very basic things, you know, education. Without education, we don't go very far, for spinal bifida especially. I don't know about other OKU, you know, or other people with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I think all of us, since we are have limitation in our physical, I think we need to have more education to change our life. I have always stressed on the importance of education. So for me, it's basic needs. I do hope that government can pick up today, the discussion here, you know, and do something about it.
Yeah.
Because classrooms are not downstairs. It's all upstairs. And there are no lift access. You know, accessibility is really a big problem. Only few schools are really, really looking into it and do some changes, like put the class downstairs, you know. So like me, I got all this treatment when I was young in Penang. You know, I grew up in Penang. My class are all downstairs. And sometimes the school are so nice, they put me next to the toilet.
Right.
You know, the classroom is next to the toilet, so I don't have to really run like 10 miles away, you know. So for me, things like that are very...
And that was small. A government school?
Government school. I was in convent school in Penang, you know, and then also I was in a Setiawan Perak, Aitawa. You know, so all the schools are quite...
Accommodating.
The teachers are very lovely. So I have gone through a more pleasant experience with the government school, public school. So for nowadays, I realize more and more the cases, my members come to us and say, can you help me? Because I can't send my children to any other school because they do not have the facilities to accommodate to their needs. So for me, this shouldn't even arise with this country going towards, you know, 2020 and, you know, being a modern society, you know. Things like that should all be there already.
Would you say it's as simple as having a classroom downstairs and next to a toilet?
Yes.
It's as simple as that?
Yes, as simple as that.
Okay.
But funnily, we have problems with schools that cannot accommodate to that. How many handicaps are there in the school? I don't think that every classes have handicap, you know. So for me, a small request like that should be able to be handled without even have to argue about it.
Going back to 13 years old, So you found that it was hard for you to wear skirts. How did you cope again after that?
I always bring a set of change for my clothes, you know, in case it happens, halfway, going to school, sometimes in the buses.
The incontinence.
Yes, being incontinence. It can be quite embarrassing. So, and then also, I wasn't trained to use catheters and all that. Because, thank God, you know, I don't have to rely on that, you know. But there's also other complications like urinary infections and all that because we can't clean it properly like normal people. So, at the age of 13, also puberty, we have like... crush, you know, and that,
of course,
yes.
the boys looking at the girls, and the girls looking at the boys.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, of course, you like someone in the class and all that. You actually, we are normal people. It's just that we have a little bit of limitation in our physical appearance and all. So that time actually was a lot of things we start to think. Oh, am I going to be able to function like normal woman? You know, normal girls. Can I pregnant? And all these kind of questions will come up. And how about sexually? Are we able to actually enjoy, you know, something like that? Because this kind of age, we are really exposed to all this thing. But I think now children are more earlier stage than 13. You know? So I think my parents, my family is a very strict family when it comes to all this thing. No questions. So, cannot ask these questions. If you ask something wrong, means that are you having somebody or are you doing some nonsense?
Yes.
So, what we can do is just asking brothers and sisters sometimes. I got six of us. So, of course, it's always taboo, you know. Don't do it. It's very bad. You know, don't even ask. Not good. You must finish your study. But I think that also worked quite well, that I finish my study only, I really go and date, you know. So, don't really... date when I was young. But mixing around with friends and all that, I still do a lot of nonsense when I was young. Actually, I go biking, you know, motorbiking. Ooh. With no license.
Did you ride it yourself?
Yes. I'm quite a stunt person.
That. I know. She just didn't wear a leather jacket for this interview.
I have my boots, actually. I'm a boots collector.
That's really great to know. I mean, it's as you said, it's a very much a normal life. But you had a lot of determination. And what I'm hearing is your mental resilience comes very much from the upbringing, the family.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come back after a quick market update to find out more about the children today and how the sort of support they need psychologically. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Professor Rashida can talk about the rehab and how important that is for people living with spina bifida. So that's coming up after the market update. If you have a question, our phone lines are open. It's 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 016-201-9000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. If you have just joined us, we have Yang Mi Eng, who's the president of the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia, as well as Associate Professor Dr. Rashida Ismail, consultant rehab physician. If you're wondering what that is, it's spina bifida is a condition that affects your spine and your spinal cord, of the unborn child, sort of leaving the child after that with varying degrees of disabilities. It can range from paralysis. It can lead to other physical and emotional challenges later on in life. And we spoke to Dr. Rashida just now, and she said the main contributor to spina bifida is the lack of folate during pregnancy. That can be, of course, that's the reason why they tell you take folic acid as soon as you find out. In fact, they tell you as you are trying for a baby, start taking folic acid. But the interesting thing is it also could be hereditary. And if you're wondering where you can get your source of folic acid otherwise, oranges, grapes, strawberries, grapefruit. What about local fruits, Professor Rashida? I mean, this sounds expensive. Grapes are not cheap. Strawberries are not cheap. Bananas, oranges, maybe.
Bananas,
yes. Okay, yes, papaya. Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Those are Malaysian. We can afford that. Mi Eng is actually sharing her experience growing up with spina bifida, the psychological aspect of things. You have spoken about how you grew up in a very traditional family of six back in the day. No one gave in to you because of your disability. That sort of has built some sort of mental resilience as far as you coping with spina bifida is concerned. So today now, you have been running the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia for the last 10 years. And you were saying that nowadays the parents seem to mollycoddle these children. So how do you manage? How do you advise them? What sort of support do you give them at the association?
Okay, support in terms of we're talking about sharing our experience, and also sometimes some parents actually encounter problem with their children having infection of the kidney failure after urinary infection. So sometimes using catheters alone might not help. You know, they still have the occurrence of these issues. So sometimes it's quite private. They need to know how to pee. Actually, it's quite challenging. Most people, most normal people will not think about even how to pee and how to poo-poo, you know.
It's almost a reflex.
Yeah, almost a certain natural things, you know. But for spina bifida people, we have to think about how, the methods, how to push, you know, how to actually clear our bladder, when to clear, what time, you know.
Because there's no sensation.
Yes. How many hours. And then before sleep, before bed, perhaps no drinking. So all this worry comes, and some of them couldn't handle it. And they actually have constipation because no drinking. Because they thought no drinking means no pee. So this kind of psychological imbalance and confusions, it's happening. So we actually have peer support. Like some of them actually do come forward and ask about these sort of things and how. Then sometimes I have to really tell them, why don't you try these methods and why don't you try feeding certain soft diet to your child? This is from experience. And then also on sexual matters sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, some of the father or mother really ask me, you know, can my daughter conceive? Can they have sex normally, you know? So I sometimes felt that I'm actually a sex
therapist.
Maybe there will be my second things I'm going to study. So they actually worry about how the well-being of the children. Some of them are actually very young, you know, it's about 7-8 years old, but their parents really start
Thinking ahead
how, you know. So actually we can lead a normal life. I mean, of course, there's certain things to adjust, you know, when it comes to relationship. It don't have to be follow whatever the books say, you know. A, you have to be like this, second, you know. So it is all about feelings and how your another partners, you know, actually supporting you mentally. That's why it's very important to understand spina bifida people. And I think generically, people with disability, it's the same. We're thinking the same. But since we have incontinence, that's why there are certain things to prepare actually in advance. Of course, it's not comfortable to share openly like this. Spina Bifida Association will be able to assist to actually share with you if there's any chance that people wanted to call us. We can actually share our numbers and our website. I do have some emails sent to me from time to time asking about advice and all that.
Okay. Yeah. So it's all about the management then, Professor Rashida. Rehab, how important is that for people to lead as near normal a life as possible?
Okay. First of all, they need to come for the regular follow-up with our multidisciplinary team care. So we have to attend to our medical issues first, and then they can go into the community and can do a social activity. So, especially those with the myelomeningocele. They present to you with the paralysis, lower limb weakness. So means for them to be able to function like a normal. A bit difficult, but they can fairly lead a normal life, providing they follow our suggestions and with the support of the our community and our society. So means example, if they have a foot deformities, means a flexible foot deformity, they must be on the spleen. So with the spleen, we can improve the alignment, and they will be able to walk. Right? But the problem is they look different from normal. So that's the reason our children, their rejection to orthosis is very high. So these are the things we have to look into. Because the minute the foot become deformed, fixed deformity, the next things we can offer is a surgery. So right. Most of the parents, they are very reluctant to go ahead with this, aggressive therapy.
So as children, it's much easier to manipulate.
Exactly.
Is what you're
saying. Before it's fixed, you make sure you put them on the splints. Mm. And then, that's the same things go to the passing motion, passing urine management. That must be started very earlier on to prevent all the complications, especially for, passing urine part. Repeated UTI is notorious, and they end up with a kidney failure. So this all needs to be sorted out before it's too late.
Okay.
So we need multidisciplinary team approach.
Yeah. Miang, is that very costly for anyone to get the support of a multidisciplinary team?
Yes, we actually did a calculation because recently we are actually approaching some corporates for support. So what we do is, on average, we are talking about 500 ringgit for 1 month. So for 1 year, an average is one person is about 5,000 ringgit. 5,000 to minimum to 15,000. Because we are looking at different types of wheelchair. Because we have spine problems, so we can't use the same type of wheelchair the whole life. So we have to change our wheelchair. And then also, like I mentioned, orthosis. They have to also change the orthosis. So these are the kind of gaps support that we don't get from government. Because it's quite costly. One wheelchair can cost about 30,000-40,000.
Depends on the type of the wheelchair. Type,
yeah. 30,
basic 1,000 to 3,000-4,000.
Yeah, to 30,000, some spine support. And then also for catheters and pampers, you're talking about 1 month maybe coming up to 400 ringgit minimum. Because you have to change every day, maybe two or three pieces. Some of them actually couldn't afford to change. So they ended up having the package, from morning until evening. So this is quite sad.
And then that leads to UTI.
Exactly.
And then more thing I would like to add on, for those children, growing children, they tend to have one condition, it's tethering of the spinal cord.
Which is?
We also call, the tethered cord syndrome. Means the spinal cord is attached to the spinal bone through the surrounding structures, Normally, our spinal cord hangs loose inside the canal, and it can freely moving up and down with the movement, with the growth. So in these conditions, they can present to you with a new onset of the weakness, new changes in the bladder and power. So that are the alarming signs for the doctors as well as the patients and the family members, and the issues need to be addressed immediately.
Okay. Yeah. So now you are on a fund collection drive.
Yes.
What are you going to have a concert from the 26th to the 28th of May. What will these funds be used for?
Okay, this fund will be used to support the members of course, just now we mentioned, there's no diapers, catheters supply from government. So we are actually distributing. And then also we are having some programs related to spina bifida, workshops, and then also home visit, because sometimes we go to houses and then get to know the members. And then also advising the parents and all the new things, what is available. Maybe they can actually come forward to see Dr. Amara and Professor Rashida. And we also have some sort of campaign from time to time. So, but all this need money. That's why without any support, it's very difficult to move forward. Because the only thing that government actually provide right now, which is 300 ringgit per month for one patient, and go to maximum 450. So it's an allowance. But then this is actually not enough if you're talking about catheters and diapers alone, you know?
Really not enough.
Yeah, not okay. Really not enough. So
we have a question from William, Professor Rashida. Is spina bifida life-threatening?
Yes, if you life threatening means if you know if they are following up with the you know proper clinic, all some of the complications are preventable. So means spina bifida in sense is not curable. We all know, but the, you know it can its complications can be effectively managed and prevented.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. So this concert from the 26th to the 28th of May, we're going to give away 10 pairs of tickets. If you text WhatsApp me 0162019000 right now and send me your name, your IC number, and if you say spina bifida, we're actually happy to give you one pair of tickets for the concert. So the artists on that day, I only recognize Mieng, who's what are you going to be doing? Is that your brother Wei Han?
Yes, Wei Han is he's a composer and a musical artist.
Okay,
and a recording artist also in Malaysia.
I know Kumar Kartik, yes.
Yeah. And we have a Sunday special martini show. We have Ras Adiba.
Okay, fantastic. Yes, all right. So what is this? What can we expect? It's a jazz ensemble. Am I correct?
This is actually a combination. It's a musical thematic musical show. Singing is part of it, of course, a motivational singing, you know. It will take you to 8 themes, which is the life of spina bifida people from birth until the end. So this 8 themes will show you what kind of challenges they face, you know, what kind of problems they have day-to-day life. So we wanted public to actually understand more about OKU and also about spina bifida. That's why we wanted to share this through musical concept. Instead of announcement or you know text and all that.
Okay. Yeah. What are you going to be doing? Are you going to be singing?
Yes. Unfortunately. Sorry.
So you sing. Such hidden talent. See, we would not have known that.
Most spina bifida people are very artistic.
Talented as well.
Artistic, yes.
Fantastic.
Yes.
So this is happening at Deepak Theatre, which is the Damansara Performing Arts Centre. If you'd like more information, you can log on to the Spina Bifida Association website. That's CBIAM, SIBIAM.MY. And a phone number?
Phone number is actually, ticket phone number is, you can call Leo, 012-690-3390 or Lisa, 7710-3799.
Okay.
You can even get it from Deepak.
Directly.
Yes.
Okay. So cbm.my is the website if you'd like support as well on spina bifida. Ladies, thank you very much for joining me today. It was an eye-opening knowledge actually to understand your journey, Mieng, as well as what's available today, Professor Rashida, for patients with spina bifida. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Mira, for having us.
That was Yang Mieng, President of the Spina Bifida Association of Malaysia, and Associate Professor Dr. Rashida Ismail, Consultant Rehab Physician on Spina Bifida on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.